Pod. Pod.
Just like how you ended up getting the band together and how you went from that point to like releasing albums.
All right. Well, me and Rob, the guitarist, had always kind of like just jammed together. But this was in like the late 90s, like 2000. So we were like the music scene then was, it was like just new metal, and it was either new metal or you had like shit like Travis and Kings of Convenience and shit like that, and we weren't into either of them. So we both started listening to like the Kinks and like Small Faces and fucking like just anything. Like we were just going through back like fucking like old bands that were meant to be good and listening to them. I think like Rob bought like a Kiss album and we were like, nah, this fucking sucks. I bought a Ramones album. Me and Rob played it, and I remember Rob was like, it sounds broken. And it's like, because it was the first album, and like, you're like, oh, they're meant to be a punk band, but it's like, it fucking, when you listen to it now, it sounds like timid as fuck. Like, because it's like, obviously, like, recording techniques, it just doesn't sound heavy at all. And like, oh no, it was Rob that bought the Ramones album. And I remember he bought it from our price, and I remember he returned it. and then I remember like the thing that changed everything was like when the Strokes happened, and it was like, fucking hell. Like, me and Rob were just like, fucking, this is the band. This is like fucking just the way they dressed, fucking the songs, fucking immediately wanted to fucking move to New York at that point. And we were like, that's when we were like, we decided to fucking like form a band. And I ended up going out with this girl. She had a younger brother, and I think he was like 13. He was 13 or 14 at the time, and we were like 17, 18. But we started jamming with him, and he was good. And so we started going to rehearsal rooms. And then, do you remember Special Needs, the band?
Yeah, really good.
They lived in Acton as well. And we got talking to Zach in a pub, and they put on this like really shit like indie night in Acton, which is where we're from. And he was like, how do you start trying to play? And we were like, yeah, we'll play it. And we're like, we had like five songs and we didn't have a fucking name. And he was like, oh yeah, oh, okay. Well, text me all the details and I'll book you in. And we were like, fuck.
Quite an impression to me.
So I think we went and we rehearsed and we managed to get up to like six songs. And we didn't have a name. So, and we didn't have a bass player either. So me and Rob had, like, just started dressing exactly like the Strokes. And so we were, like, wearing, like, vintage T-shirts. And Rob just had this, like, T-shirt, which was, like, a commemorative, like, T-shirt. You know, in America, like, when they have, like, fucking, like, birthdays and shit, they'll make T-shirts. And it was, like, from the 80s. And it had, like, hockey sticks on it for some reason. And it said Dustin's Bar Mitzvah. So it was, like, obviously, like, a commemorative T-shirt from someone called Dustin celebrating their bar mitzvah.
Really good.
And we just ended up, like, calling it that. Like, the drummer really wanted us to be called Up the Bum.
Up the Bum.
Up the Bum.
Crikey.
I wanted us to be called the Cosmonauts. I thought that was good. And Rob would just, in the end, just went, no, let's just call it this. It doesn't matter. You can change it later. And so we booked this gig and went up, like, had no fucking idea what he did. I plugged my guitar into the bass amp by accident.
Is it still without a bass player?
Yeah, without a bass player. And so we played this gig. We had like six songs. But, And so the girl I was seeing at the time, the drummer's brother, had like made loads of flyers and got shitloads of people to come. So I think about 200 people came. And it was like absolutely rammed. And we had like six songs. And we were so fucking nervous. We played them really fast. And I swear, like, the gig was like 11 minutes long. And they were like, play some more songs. And we were like, we don't know any. we've only got these songs. And I remember, like, a few people came up to me afterwards and was like, I thought that was really genius how, like, you played for a bass amp, like, like, you were like, fuck having a bassist, I'm just going to play for a bass amp. I was like, I didn't know, was that a bass amp?
So, yeah, superb.
That's how, like, the band formed.
Well, then he just kind of got the bug from there, kind of thing.
Yeah, we did. We eventually got a bass player, obviously. And he, like, fucking, he was like, he knew what he was doing. He was like going around, just going, what are you doing? Like, why turn this off? Like fixing our guitars for us and shit. Because he'd been to the fucking music college.
Was he the lad from Middlesbrough or something?
Yeah.
Was his name?
Baker.
Yeah.
And he came in, like, totally, like, and then it was like, oh shit, actually, fuck, he sounded good. And then we were playing, like, gigs around West London, and it wasn't until, I think, what's his name? His name's dropped out of my head. That promoter used to do Rhythm Factory all the time.
Johnny Rhythm?
No, not Johnny Rhythm. Oh, Andy Payton.
Oh, yeah, I know Andy, yeah.
Andy Payton got hold of us and was like, oh, I want you to come play with Rhythm Factory. It wasn't until we started playing, like, those type of gigs that, like, we started getting, like, people who weren't our friends, do you know what I mean, turning up at the gigs.
Like, yeah, right.
Don't want to call them, like, fans.
But I was going to say that. I think they're called fans, mate.
Yeah. But, yeah, till we started getting fans turning up at the gigs. And, like, yeah, just, like, put more and more time into songwriting.
What year was this, Dev?
I've got to warn you now, like, throughout this whole podcast, like, in terms of like timelines and years, like it's all muddled in my head.
Yeah, I do the same. Everything. It's so hard to just remember when things were.
Yeah, so I'm thinking with Andy Payton, that must have been 2002, 2003-ish.
I imagine it was quite like a busy or growing scene at that point. Did you feel part of a scene early on?
Yeah, we did actually. It was weird. It was, I remember, yeah, because quite a lot of those bands liked us. And I think they liked us because we were like a bit shit at the time. But they kind of liked us and they got on with us. And yeah, that's like when it really felt like there was like a fucking scene forming. There definitely was like a fucking scene forming.
Yeah, I think that was kind of just how it went back then as well, wasn't it? Because like, I think we felt pretty similar at stages where you're just a bit like, right, we don't really know what we're doing. We've hardly got any songs, but we get along with people, so we're in. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. And that was
That was the beauty of that like era, like that time. Everyone were mates.
Yeah. I remember as well, and there was a period where I'd be going out like 3-4 times a week to like indie nights and like a new kind of everyone on the door, so we'd never have to fucking pay to get in. And you could get like fucking drunk as fuck on a tenner. Because drinks are like a quid. Do you remember them? I don't know if you'd know about them, Tom, but it was like Metro, Cheapskates.
I used to try and pile in the student nights and stuff.
Our favourite was after school club on a Saturday. Did you ever go to that?
I can't remember that one, but yeah, there was loads of them. It was the same in Hull as well. You just go to fucking. It was mad actually compared to now.
Yeah.
Quid like.
Quid for vodka and coke.
Quid a drink.
Yeah. So go
should
out.
Be illegal that, to be fair.
I think it probably is now.
Yeah.
So you'd go out of like a tenner, you could just get wasted, and like. And then you bump into like more people from bands, because you could always tell people in bands because they had like cool hair. You'd be like, what's your band called? Like, we're called, like, I don't know. We're called the Vagabonds.
I'd be like,
you're shit. You're bad as shit.
Up the bum, I can't handle
that. So what point did you feel like you're building a bit of a reputation, and did you get like good feedback from obviously building your crowd and stuff?
I think we, like when we got our first review on the internet, I know it sounds like it's like minor now, but I was like, whoa. We got our first review. We were playing with, I can't remember who we were playing with. We were playing with a band called Past Caring. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
They were a Booze band.
Boo, yeah, of course. Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah. So yeah. We were playing with them, and that was over in East London somewhere. Yeah, and we got a review on a website, and it was like really good. And I just remember like I fucking printed it off and I was like showing people, I was going, look, my band are good. And then yeah, it's like from there we just kind of got more and more kind of notoriety. I think we started to get like a reputation as well, because we'd get like really drunk before we'd play. For me, that was like a way of dealing with like fucking like stage fright, because I never wanted to be the singer of the band. We didn't know how to go about finding a singer, and I wasn't a good enough guitarist to just kind of get away with being a guitarist in a band. So I kind of had to be the singer and like write the songs as well. And so we'd get really drunk when we played, and like we kind of do like regrettable things when we were drunk. Yeah,
we had a story from 5 o'clock. Heroes came on and said
I want to talk to you about that.
Right,
go on.
Now I checked the episode today because I remember he mentioned you a lot, and he said something like, the dog's barking, for fuck's sake. He said basically the promoter threw a beer at you and you thought it was someone in the crowd, so you went for the crowd. Yeah. Or something like that.
See, he said his girlfriend said it, so I'm not gonna fucking say he's got it wrong, but she's got it wrong.
Okay.
I remember seeing this beer. It was at Astoria. Yeah, it was at Frog
Club. Yeah. Yes.
We were playing, and I remember just seeing this beer can coming out of my fucking, like, coming towards me, and you know when kind of things slow down a bit, and I was like, that's hitting me straight in the head. And it did, and I saw it come straight from the fucking crowd, and because it was the last song, like, I just jumped off the stage and just started punching people. And then about 6 years ago, out of nowhere, in Wetherspoons in Acton, someone came up to me, and I'd completely forgotten about this. They were like, "Oh, you're in Dustin's Bar Mitzvah, weren't you?" And I was like, "Yeah." They were like, "Do you remember when you played Frog? And someone threw a beer at you and it hit you in the head?" And I was like, "Yeah, I do." The guy was like, "Look, that was me, and I'm really sorry. Can I buy you a drink?" And this was like so fucking weird, because it was like Acton is like out of the way. It's not like some kind of sceney part of London or anything like that. I don't know. I think he told me the name, and I sat down and like had a chat with him and his girlfriend for a bit. And he was like, I was like, why did you throw a beer at me? And he was like, "I don't know, I was just drunk." And I was like, "All right, yeah, that's fair enough." So he's admitted it. And so I was thinking about this, and it's like the only other like scenario I can come up in my head where she's not got it wrong, is if this happened like more than once, and Tom
probably has.
Oh God, I know it's happened like fucking glass bottles thrown at us in Germany
for a reason.
Yeah, because like some fucking local Nazis came down and they thought we were a Jewish band.
Really? Wow, that is.
And got a glass bottle like fly past my head and like smash against the wall. Yeah, but used to get fucking cans shut to us all the time, to be fair.
So you had like a lot of, would you say, like chaotic live shows, or were you just like a bit hammered and up for a scrap if it was necessary?
No, they were like they were like really chaotic, to be fair, some of them. It's weird. It's like some of them you'd kind of like laser focus and you'd fucking, you just like pull off this immaculate fucking gig. And other times you just, it would just be like fucking like songs falling apart in the middle. Fucking, I'd like just go on a rant for like 5 minutes between a song about something. I used to have this thing where I'd just like be like calling out people in the audience, like thinking of like a celebrity they look like. Well, all right, Michael Barrymore. Yeah.
Love to see someone looking like Michael Barrymore on Indie Night.
I reckon loads of people did, to be fair.
In a suit, yeah.
This guy was only like 22, but he looked like a young Michael Barrymore.
Excellent. What's been?
Go on.
Sorry, I was just going to ask Tom, like, what's been your attitude to boozing before gigs? Has it always been the same, or have you kind of changed? Like, you're going on tour this week, are you? Like, what will you be doing? Will you be boozing before you go on stage?
Yeah, we're playing tomorrow, actually. I think I'll have a few, yeah, but like probably not like we used to.
Yeah.
Just, I can't do it like that anymore anyway, especially not before playing a show. But we used to think we were ace as well, but it's probably proper shit. I think we're actually sound better now as well, because yeah, maybe that's the reason.
That's why I fucking really loved like fucking going on tour with, when we tour with you lot.
Yeah, we used to tour together quite a lot, didn't we?
Yeah, it was good because like I think we both had the same attitude to like just like drinking all day.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah,
sounds,
I think that was that was definitely where we clicked at first.
Yeah, just like other bands. I remember, oh god, did some fucking like tours with bands where they were just like, they were like, they'd stay completely sober till like after the gig. They'd have like two bottles of beer. They'd be like, right, you got to get to the hotel, got to get up fresh and early for tomorrow. You boys don't stay out too late. And we'll be like, fuck off, we're staying out and right.
Each to their own, isn't it? But you'd bump into a few of those along the way. But we used to. God, I remember playing in Brighton with you lot. I think it was. And your tour manager Pete. Fuck me, he was a legend.
He was.
He used to turn up with plenty of fuel for the fire.
I was like wondering whether to like fucking like bring him up on the podcast and shit, but he was
maybe don't put that bit in.
I think fuel for the fire, I think that's like ambiguous enough that like no one's gonna fucking Yeah, but that was the thing. That was the problem. We were like four young, like reckless, out of control, like kids, basically. And we needed like a manager who was like going to be like completely in control and be able to like calm us down and like fucking and. Instead, we got like fucking like somebody who was like 10 times more reckless and fucking mental than we were, like managing. Yeah.
He was a proper legend though. He's such a good guy as well. Wasn't he like a Chelsea like hooligan or something?
He was a QPR hooligan.
QPR, sorry. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just my defining memory of Pete is like we played a gig in Nambuka and him like storming out, and he was like, "Get in the taxi, get in the taxi, get in the taxi." And he was like, "Why?" And he was like, "Just get in the fucking taxi." And I looked down, and he had like a fucking broken bottle of Jack Daniels in his hand. I was like, "All right, fucking yeah, get in the taxi."
Oh, God.
Taxi got out of there.
I was going to say you could probably talk about that story. Was we in Norwich? Was it Norwich? Where we, when we were on tour with you, and we walked in on you.
Oh yeah. That was.
Remind me of the story again.
Right. So it's just like, you know, when you get a bit pissed and like. We were being interviewed by these student, like, fucking newspaper. I think Norwich University student newspaper. And I remember one of the girls that was interviewing us was quite fit. And I was, like, pissed. And, I just remember thinking, I'm going to shag you. I think I even like it was just kind of like not paying attention. The other girl was asking questions, and I think I was just kind of like under my breath saying to the girl, like, I'm going to shag you.
Wow.
And so everyone, like, at the end of the fucking interview, like, left the fucking changing room. And she, like, fucking comes over and, like, jumps on me. And we end up, like, you know, in the, like, toilet shower room thing, doing whatever. And then all of a sudden, fucking you... Marv and fucking Josh. I think it was, it might have been all fucking five of you and Baco come in and fucking like turn the shower on and just like fucking like completely like hose us down. Fucking with this shower, just completely like.
You have to respect our dressing room, mate.
I don't even know if it was your dressing room.
I do. That is one memory, haven't you, though? Just walking in with a girl. It's like, what the fuck is going on here? We haven't even done the show yet.
That was like 3 p.m.
So is this like a tour you're on together, or is it just like one-off gigs you're doing?
No, you came on a couple of tours with us, I think, didn't you?
I think we came on three. No, I think, yeah, I think we might have done three tours with you. And, yeah, there's that band 5 o'clock Heroes as well.
Yeah.
Okay.
They were good times.
They were good fun. That was when you introduced me to, what's it called? Chip powder.
Chip spice.
Yeah, we were in Hull, and me and Tom had, like, I think we played the gig, and we went and got chips, and Tom was like, you gotta get chip spice. And I was like, what the fuck is chip spice? It was just this fucking horrible thing that, like, people in Hull couldn't realise why everyone else fucking didn't fucking do it. Like, and
it's the best thing about Hull, to be fair.
Yeah. And anyway, so I put fucking like fuckloads of this on my chips, and they were like fucking inedible. So me and you just went outside and got our chips and stood there and lobbed them at cars for about half hour.
I do not remember that.
You know. Stood on the corner. Loving chips at Cars.
Sounds like a Milburn lyric or something.
Milburn.
Oh, shit, hell.
Yeah.
Wow.
I remember supporting Milburn in Sheffield. No, I was going to say, they were kind of one of them bands that are a bit too big for their boots.
All right. What in terms of...
The fact that they just sounded exactly like Arctic Monkeys. And, yeah, I remember playing the gig with them and just being like, these guys think they're going to be the biggest band in the world.
Were they mates with the Arctic Monkeys as well?
Yeah, they were.
Yeah.
But, you know...
I don't remember them, to be honest.
They sounded exactly like the Arctic Monkeys. I think there are a few bands that just sounded exactly like the Arctic Monkeys. I'll never forget, like, a conversation me and you had, Tom, and it was when Arctic Monkeys had, like, were first kind of getting, like, remember they kind of got big on the internet, didn't they?
Yeah.
Thing, and we'd both played gigs with them. And we were like, me and you were like, don't really get it. They're like, they're no better than like any of these other bands. They're no better than us, like that. And we were like, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just, I don't get why everyone's fucking hyping them up. And then like you fast forward to now and they've like headlined Glastonbury like two or three times and shit.
I do remember. I remember when they first came out, and I didn't want to like them. But even deep down, I did. Do you know what I mean? It was a bit like, well, I didn't. I wasn't like a big fan at first, but I do remember just being a bit jealous.
I hated them. But looking back at it now, it was like pure jealousy. Because
yeah, exactly.
We played Head of Steam in Newcastle, and it was like us and them playing, and like on the night I think, do you know what I mean, we played as good a gig as them and kind of got as good a reaction, and then all of a sudden like they were having this number one single and stuff like that, and I was like, right, I fucking hate you. Hate you.
Yeah.
And I'm going to hate you for fucking years.
Yeah. Now I love them. I really like the second album, though.
Yeah. See,
the second one's great.
Yeah. I think some of the stuff I've heard of them, it's a bit try hard, isn't it?
Thanks for listening to this episode of 22 Grand Pod. If you're a fan of this era of guitar music, then you might enjoy our Patreon page, where myself and my mate George will be going back and looking through at loads of stuff from back in the day, including the Noughties Deep Dive, where we take a look back at the likes of the Stalking Pete Doherty documentary and go through it in painful detail, as well as things like the NME Awards from back in the day and discussing what happened. We also have our Legend or Landfill series, where we'll be going through NME's top 10 albums of each year from 2001 onwards and see if we think they are indeed legendary or one for the landfill. Plus my favourite Noughties album, where we'll be inviting patrons to come on the podcast and talk about their favourite bands, albums or moments from back in the day. Patrons will also get early access to any main podcast episodes and interviews around a week before they go on the normal channels. So overall, you'll be getting at least one episode a week for only £3 a month. Just head to patreon.com/22grandpod or check for the link in the description. Also, you can check out the video versions of the podcast interviews and plenty more over on our YouTube channel. Or you can find the link in the description to this episode. Just moving on to your... recordings and stuff then, Dave. Like, am I right in thinking you released an album in Japan before you did in England? Is that right?
Yeah, so weird. Like, we first thing we put out was like, we'd gone in with a producer to do some demos, and we did a song called Jimmy White and a song called Lucy. And he was like, after we'd like done the demos and shit, he was like, I want to release these, like, I want to put them out. We were like, all right then. And he had like a little record label. But fair play, like, they kind of, you know, like, we had like professional video shot and stuff like that. And that was getting played on like MTV2 and like these other music channels. But that was just like a little single deal in England. And yeah, it was getting like radio play and stuff like that. And it's like, to this day, I can't understand it, because Jimmy White is like one of the worst songs that we've ever written. It's just, it's nonsense. It's just really kind of shit song, shit recording. Anyway, and we basically got signed in Japan before we got signed in this country. So off the back of that, Japanese label called Vinyl Junkie, who I think they had like the Wombats and the Wild Hearts, and I think they did Neil's Children. They had like a bunch of like fucking English and American bands, and I think they were kind of like almost like a Japanese, they were like a record shop as well, so they were almost like a Japanese version of Rough Trade. Yeah, they were like, you know, we want to release an album, want to fly you out and like have you play some shows in Japan and do some stuff. And this was like before we'd like even been approached by any record labels in the United Kingdom. So yeah, we were like, fuck yeah. So we did that. We released an album, which was essentially a bunch of our demos, like mastered. Like raw as fuck, but that did really well in Japan, and yeah, went over and did a bunch of shows, like supported Supergrass there.
What was that like then? I read that you played a sold out tour pretty much over there. Was that a bit surreal?
Yeah, it was. Yeah, because we'd never sold out anything like in this country. It was. Do you know what? It was like the first time we went to Japan was fucking mental. We had people, like girls waiting for us at the airport, like when we arrived. Don't know how they got all this information, like when our flights were and stuff. And then like, We had to be moved hotels, because like we just had like this group of girls outside our hotel the whole time with fucking presents, and the label were like, no, you can't go down and speak to them. Like in Japan, they were like, there needs to be like a disconnect between the audience and the fans, which was like completely like the opposite of like how things were going in London at the time, you know, when it was just, yeah, fucking people stage diving and shit like that. And, you know, there wasn't that kind of disconnect between the audience and the fans. It was like, everything was just, for like a brief period of time, everything was just like really nice. And, but anyway, yeah, so they were like, no, you can't go down. And I was like, but they've bought us presents. And they were like, no, you can't. So we had to go to a different hotel and sign in using like fake names. It was just all that really fucking like really surreal. And they were like as well, you know, under no circumstances must you like have sex with any of the fans. Yeah,
feel like your parents or something.
It was like really, and oh my god, like I nearly freaked out. I remember like the first gig we played, they're like, they tried to stop us like drinking before like we played, and I was like, no, you don't understand, we've never played like sober in our fucking lives, like we can't do it. Like we had this like big like fucking argument, and in the end they ended up letting us have like a limited amount of booze before we went up. I don't think they really...
Is that the label that's doing that? Or...
Yeah, that's the label. But I don't think they understood that, like, we could, like, easily drink, like, I don't know, like, 6 pints and, like, go and play, like, a fucking brilliant show. I think they were just like, no, if you have any alcohol, you'll fuck up. And it was like, no, if we don't have any alcohol, we'll fuck up. Like, that was just the way it was. It was like, yeah. I mean, we did like a Dustin's reunion show in 2011. And I played that sober. That was like the only Dustin's gig I ever played sober.
Where was it? Where was that?
Was it the Lexington?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
What was that like then?
Oh, that was like really, really fucking cathartic. It was like, yeah, it was good because it kind of ended on like a kind of, everything just kind of imploded. We did like a, like, I remember we did like a final show at the 100 Club. Like we had this like fucking 40-day UK tour booked. And we'd just been on tour in Austria and Germany. And so we got there to Austria and we'd been sponsored by Red Bull and Jägermeister. And so they'd given us this like tour bus, which was like stocked full of Red Bull and Jägermeister. And we were like, oh, this is amazing. And it had like PlayStation 2s in the back. And we were like, this is class. This is wicked. And then like kind of got to the Germany part and like Red Bull were like, all right, see ya. And, and fucking like drove off and left us with our shit. So like turned out that like we'd only been sponsored in Austria by Red Bull. All right. And not in Germany. And this is like when I was just like, I'd like fucking like had it with our manager. Like, I was like, how did you not fucking like grasp that this was like what was happening? Like, we don't have like a van or anything, and we've got a fucking like tour Germany now. And we ended up fucking touring Germany by train, like, right. Taking all our equipment on the fucking train. And
that is mad. Surely you didn't have amps.
Yeah, we had amps. Luckily, we had like a couple of like fucking roadies with us. Actually, we had one roadie and one guy who still to this day, I can't work out what... I'm friends with him on Facebook, but I can't work out to this day what he was doing there. He was just American. I think he either just like emailed Pete, our manager, and asked to come on tour with us. saying he was a photographer or something. But I remember he didn't do anything. He just like used to like kind of like sit there and just kind of like watch everything that was going on. And he got roped into fucking carrying amps about. Carrying amps on and off trains. And then just one gig in Berlin, I just had like a fucking like meltdown on stage. And I was just like, I was on stage and I was just like, can't fucking do this. Like my manager's fucking like incompetent. Like, I don't know, like the world he operated in, you couldn't just back out of deals, if you know what I mean. So it was just like he was our manager and he was going to be our manager. And I was just like, got back and was just like, can't do this anymore. Can't fucking, do you know what I mean? Like, we're tied to this bloke. Like,
what year was this then?
It's like 2007.
Right. And your album came out in 2006, right?
Yeah, or 2005.
I think it's 2006.
Wikipedia. Yeah. Yeah, we recorded it in 2005, came out in 2006. So we spent like all of 2006 like touring and promoting that album. And then we had to go off and like fucking do exactly the same thing in Europe. And I don't know like how bands do this, how like they can play the same like set every night. Because I was just like, I want to play new songs. I want to, like, do you know what I mean? I want to play, like, I don't want to play these old songs. These are really old.
Was it like a mutual decision as a band to call it a day in 2007, or what happened?
Well, I think Toby, the drummer, was like, he was like, I want to go off. I want to, like, travel around Europe. We were like, cool. And the like us three, and then Pat Cheddar, who was like our drum tech, were like, yeah, let's form a band, but let's just like focus on recording. Because by that point, I hated touring. Like, I really fucking hated it. It'd like just become a cycle of like getting up, like getting drunk, fucking being like stuck in a van with like your best mates, but like they were doing your head in. And I remember just thinking like a 40-day fucking UK tour. And like shit just used to go wrong for us on tour that didn't need to go wrong, like due to like fucking poor planning by our manager, like the train situation. He's not going to fucking let us carry on like using the Dustin's Bar Mitzvah name. So let's just like start something new and fucking not tour. Like, you know, not even really play live, just like fucking record. Because I think that's what I enjoyed most, like the recording. Yeah, and so we did that.
Was that the Von Erich family then? Or was that something else?
Yeah, no, that was the Von Erich family.
Okay. So,
yeah, that was just... That was good, because I think we'd kind of been like pigeonholed as like a punk band.
Yeah, but other stuff that I read coming from you, like, there's a lot more to it, isn't there, than just like your punk side, if you like. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah, definitely. It was like, I think the reason people like were like, oh, they're a punk band, is because we were like loud and fast. But we were like only loud and fast, like at the beginning. Because we like we couldn't really play. Like,
yeah, and, still learning.
Yeah, we were like learning on the job, and like the easiest way to like fucking like stay in time is to play really fucking fast.
Listening back to, because we're doing these shows coming up, like listening back to our first album, I feel the same about us as well. It's like we were just so fast. Like I don't even understand how we recorded it. Fucking mental.
Yeah.
And then like nowadays, I think we even play them live a bit slower. And like our second album was a lot slower as well. But
yeah.
So do you know the Von Erich family? You did an album, right? So like, do you reckon you'll ever put it out?
Don't know. It's like, because I hadn't heard those songs in years, and like the drummer sent them to me. And I'd put them in an order that made sense to me, and like put them on SoundCloud. And I was listening to it, and I was like, "This is really good." And Rob texted me saying, "Oh, we should release this."
Yeah, I think you should.
And the thing is, it's just like, so fucking hard, like fucking, like, I mean, anyone can release anything. Do you know what I mean? It's like you just have to like stick something up on SoundCloud and it's like released.
Yeah, yeah. I know, but like you could do it like through Spotify and whatever.
Yeah, yeah. I think if we released it, I'd want to like fucking like do it properly, like put it on vinyl.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
So I might do that. But speaking of like, yeah, when you were like, oh, can't believe how fast like your first album was. We did one of the questions you sent over was there a high point? And like I was like thinking about it, and there were like two like for me like definite high points. One of them was like just this specific memory I have of being in like playing in front of like 20,000 people in Tokyo supporting Supergrass, and like just looking out, and I just remember thinking like, fuck. And the worst thing was when we got back, like from that tour of Japan, our manager had booked us like a day off, and then we were playing a pub in Blackburn. And so we came back from fucking Japan, and we've been like playing, like, you know, having like fucking girls like waiting at the airport for us and shit like that, to fucking this like shitty pub in Blackburn. with some bloke at the front just kept shouting, "Play Jimmy White." I was just like, oh. It hasn't travelled. It hasn't fucking travelled. but yeah, the first, and the other high point was like recording the first album, because we did it. This guy called Barrymore, he was the drummer in Jethro Tull. And he had this like amazing like country house. I want to say it was in Oxfordshire. It could have been Cambridgeshire, I'm not sure. I think it was in Oxfordshire. this amazing country house with like a separate house. It was a recording studio with like bedrooms like up above. And we had like 3 weeks in there to do our album. And I'd like insisted that like, because we wanted to make it sound like a proper punk album, I'd insisted on getting like fuckloads of speed. And it was like in like 2005, like fucking no one was taking speed. So I had to really search around for fucking someone to get like this fucking speed, and ended up with this like, imagine like a wrap of fucking coke, but it was like a fucking newspaper, like wrapped up fucking full of speed. And so I was like fucking, I think we all were like fucking like taking fucking shitloads of speed. And I remember that the fucking, we'd been signed in the UK by this point. This was like the UK album we were doing. And someone from the label came up and went, "It's too fucking fast." And we went in and we listened to it, and it was like literally like the fastest fucking thing you could like fucking imagine in your life, where it's like, I'm kind of like having to like really kind of like do like a almost like an Ian Dury type fucking or like a Madness type fucking singing style over it, because it's so fucking fast I can't fit the lyrics in.
Love that.
And we were like, "What do you mean?" And they were like, "It's too fast. The song's meant to be 3 minutes. It's like coming in at like 1:40.
Well,
yeah. So, and then
bad choice of drugs.
The producer was like, "You've got to stop taking that speed." And we were like, "Yeah, it's fair enough."
Alongside the high point, is there anything that you do differently?
Yeah. Probably like now, with like my fucking adult brain, I'd like take it a lot more seriously. And like try and cause less trouble. But do you know what I mean? I don't think you can really change anything and it be the same, have the same outcome. Do you know what I mean? If we'd have been all serious from the start, I don't think anyone would have paid any attention to us. I don't think obviously we did fucking shit loads of stuff like wrong and fucked up loads of times, but I don't think there's anything I'd change about it, because it was genuinely like one of the funnest times of my life.
Yeah, that's your attitude, isn't it, Tom?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, pretty much it. It's like, I don't regret anything really. But yeah, I guess you're right on just like probably being a little bit more sensible. But that was part of the fun though as well. Like,
do you know what? Like,
we were kids. At the end of the day, we were kids. Like,
yeah, and
I look at some like some 20-year-olds now. I'm like, they're not having as much fun. Kids don't have as much fun anymore.
That's what used to like piss me off when, you know, like part of that scene, and you'd get like a band come along and they were like taking it all like really fucking seriously, and they were like 19, and they were the ones that fucking got the big record deals and shit, but fucking. Yeah. And I was just like, no, you're doing this wrong. Like, you're doing it all wrong. Like, you're meant to fucking, like, you're meant to, like, fucking, like break shit on stage, and you're meant to fucking, like, get in fights, and you're meant to fucking, like, Do you know what I mean? That's what being in a band's about. Like, you're treating this like a job. Like, and never, ever got on with them bands. There was, like, only a handful of bands that we, like, kind of got on with. And, yeah, you'd got... I just remember the fucking... For me, the nail in the coffin was we were playing a gig and, like, Andy Payton had booked fucking... He was like, oh, I've got this new guy. He's like, he's amazing. Like, you're going to love him. And it was fucking Jack Pignatti.
And, oh, yeah.
Oh, my God. I've never seen, like, such a, like, fucking... It was, like, choreographed. It's like, fucking stage performance. I just remember in my head, I was just like, that's it. This scene in London now is pretty much over if this is getting lumped in with it.
Yeah, it changed a bit, didn't it?
Yeah. And I'm like, I've met him and he's like a lovely bloke and stuff, but I think he'd been to like drama school or something. And it was all just these like kind of bands taking it like fucking ultra serious, like, you know, had like fucking like 5-year plan of like what they were gonna do with the band and how they were all gonna become accountants if it didn't fucking work out. And it was just like, nah, we were just like, we didn't have a fucking like plan B. We were just like in a band, like because we were in a band. And I think that's the best way to go about it, you know?
Mm.
Just be in a fucking band and let that fucking just dictate your life, do you know what I mean?
Yeah, just like one last one we ask people, Dave, is if they've got a funny story or a story about the Gallagher brothers or just a memorable story about that scene, really, back in the day.
I read when you sent over things. The only time, like, it's not even a funny story. It's just an observation. I remember being at the Proud Galleries, and... like realizing Noel Gallagher was in front of me and thinking like, fucking hell, he's quite little. that was like the only funny Liam Noel Gallagher story I had. I've never like, I've been in the like same room as Liam and stuff, but I've never like had a conversation with him. And I think I talked to Noel that night. What were that band called? They played our album launch party. They were from the Twang. He was there to see the fucking Twang. And I just remember, I was telling him, I was just going, nah, this shit, mate, this shit. And he was just like, well. But yeah, that whole scene just kind of like collapsed in on itself. Really, it went from being like just like all these kids like at the Rhythm Factory and these other venues to this. It kind of became like seedy, and you get like these like 40-year-old men coming down like and like copping off with like 16-year-old girls and fucking like giving them drugs and stuff, and it all got really kind of polluted and fucking nasty. And then fucking overnight it was like the NME, like they heard the Klaxons. I remember they had this front cover, it's like new rave is here. And that was like, that's what killed it. They were like, nah, we're done with your fucking, with your guitar shit now. You can put them away for a bit because we like new rave, which didn't even fucking exist really as a genre. And yeah, I think that's when we knew the writing was on the wall really. Yeah, after that we didn't get any more enemy features or anything like that. They were just like new rave. That's what we like.
You didn't fancy getting the glow sticks out?
No, I fucking hated all that. I remember we played a gig in Leeds, ended up going back to a girl's house, and the next day she was like, I'll drive you back to your band's hotel. She put the Klaxons album on and I was like, fucking turn that off. Turn it off. It's rubbish. Fucking rubbish. It sounds broken. I'm sure if I went back and listened now, I'd be like, oh, it's actually like, you know, they had some pretty good songs, but at the time I hated it. I hated when everyone started wearing like fucking like bright green jeans from fucking Topshop, and like I hated all that. I liked it when it was just all ripped jeans and dirty, and that was what it was meant to be about. It's not fucking wearing a pair of fucking bright green skinny jeans and fucking throwing glow sticks at that.
I mean, you obviously played that reunion gig. Like, what was the build up to that? Why did you decide to do that?
I don't know. I just think we all kind of at the same time were like, right, it'd been like 5 years since the release of the album. We were like, we should do like a reunion gig. And like by that point I'd like quit drinking. And we like that reunion gig was like the best Dustin's gig we ever played. We were like so fucking tight. We sold out like the venue in a couple of hours type thing. And so the audience was like fucking like really in, really fucking like hot audience, really into it. And yeah, that was just really kind of in a way, it kind of allowed us to end it on like a positive note. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like put it to bed. I don't think we'll ever do like another reunion show again. We got like fucking, we've been offered them, but do you know what I mean? It's like leave the past in the past type thing.
With the no drinking then, like when did you decide to do that and why kind of thing?
Well, it just become a problem, you know? Yeah, it kind of like carried on from like fucking being in Dustin's, like to after. I was just getting wasted all the time, not really fucking able to fucking like do much at peak performance, if you know what I mean. So just quit drinking and yeah, played that fucking reunion gig sober, and that was like one of the scariest gigs I've ever played, but it was also like probably like musically, like that was like the best gig we ever did.
Are you still making music now, and can people check out anywhere and stuff?
Still writing songs, but haven't really kind of like recorded them. Kind of like half looking like for band members to form a band, but kind of very half-assedly, if you know what I mean. So we'll see. But at the moment, I just kind of enjoy writing songs.
And one more as well, just for when I post the episodes. Did you go by Dave Laser back in the day or something?
Yeah.
Okay. So I'll put that for the I'll put that in the episode title then.
Yeah, it's L-A-Z-E-R.
Okay. What was actually a bit of a stage name then?
Yeah, it was. It was good because did it as a joke. Because our bassist always used to call me Laser for some reason.
Right.
And so when we released our first single, like, I was like, fuck it. And I, like, credited myself as Dave Laser. And I was, like, really fucking glad I did that. Because it's like, if you search my, because I work in graphic design now. And if somebody, like, wants to fucking, like, kind of Google me before employing me, none of the Dustin shit comes up because that's all right. Dave Laser. It's not my real surname. So it's a fucking like stroke of genius, really. Like accidentally, but it was a stroke of genius. But I just thought Dave Laser was funny because it's Dave is just like a such a fucking everyday name. And then fucking Laser. It's just like fucking some Buck Rogers shit.